It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, sponsored by Trenton Interiors. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Tonight's show on ESPN 97.7 is also brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents, Brister's Smokehouse, National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty, as well as hotline sponsor Fairway Cards. Now here's your host for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors, a company in downtown Ruston. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. If you're listening to us, you're not listening or watching, or you could be watching. The Dunkin' Dogs on the SEC Network currently trailing Ole Miss in Oxford, Mississippi, 5-2, 17 minutes left in the half. We'll see if Jason can stay focused long enough. Now it's 4-5 with a drive by Alex Hamilton. We're not here to do play-by-play. So, Jason, you did have to you said you were going to look up somebody.
Yeah, I mean, the guy to talk about for Ole Miss is Stephon Moody. He's a Kissimmee, Florida native. Went to Florida Atlantic. At the time was in the Sun Belt. Sun Belt Freshman of the Year in 2013. Then he transferred to Kilgore College over here in East Texas. And now he's at Ole Miss. And I mean, he is the offense for Ole Miss. They only have two players in double figures, and he's averaging 23.6.
So he's the short guy there.
Yeah, 23.6 points a game. Yeah, he's 5'11", 179, so he's really quick. We'll see who gets to guard him the most. I imagine you'll see a little bit of Derek Jean on him. And
Alex Hamilton, everybody will be on him.
Yeah, everybody get a chance. But
Tech's guard should be able to – I mean, defensively, Tech should be fine against him, honestly.
It's just his quickness, and then he's going to move around a ton, try to get open looks, and he doesn't need much to get an open shot. When he gets it off, he's going to make most of them. So they're pretty big inside. They're big guys from Spain, Sebastian Saye, or however you want to say that, 6'9", 233. He averages almost a double-double, 12.4 points and 9.8 rebounds. And then they have a lot of guys averaging between 5 and 7.5 points. So really deep. But those are the two guys that make them go.
I think they just called basket interference. Sure did. Tech up 6-5, 16 minutes left in the half. Of course, today we're going to talk a little Tech football. New Orleans Bowl Saturday inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Sorry. As Tech will face Arkansas State, it's a big matchup. The Tech, I think it'll be getting down to the nitty-gritty the entire game.
Yeah, it's going to be a good matchup, and we broke it down a little bit on the website already. And the things that Arkansas State does well are kind of some of the things that Tech does well on the opposite side of the ball. So it's going to be kind of a battle of strengths, especially the fact that they rush for around 250 yards a game, and Tech is the number 9 rush defense in the country. So who wants it more? Who's going to win that matchup? That could decide the whole game right there.
We'll have Luke Matheson from Red Wolf Report .com joining us at 6:30, talking a little Louisiana Tech, Arkansas State. We'll talk Tech basketball today. We'll talk football today. Some recruiting. Got a commitment yesterday from Thomas Kletcher, junior college linebacker out of California. Big get for the Bulldogs. He visited UTSA and Louisiana Tech. Tech offered him yesterday after another junior college linebacker committed elsewhere. So putting to talk a little basketball, a little football. So stay tuned here for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We'll bring all Louisiana Tech information for you. Jason, talking basketball, since that is what's going on right now on the 42-inch LG flat screen TV brought to you by Best Way in Ruston. It is lots of injuries in the front court for Louisiana Tech thus far.
Yeah, and Ole Miss is a pretty big team, so, you know, that's going to be apparent in this game. But, you know, ULL had a big guy in Sean Long, and he got his, I mean, a little bit. He would get some offensive rebounds, and you could tell that he was a tough load to handle inside, but for the most part, Tech handled him. And I would say, being a little bit smaller, redshirt freshman, playing down low, and a guy that, you know, really hadn't been able to play a whole lot this year, but he stepped up and really did a great job on him. Brandon Shepherd, he just was battling.
There's no doubt that Brandon Shepherd had his best game as a Bulldog Saturday midday against the Cajuns, but you look at, he's filling in for the injured Merrill Holden and also Janiah White, who we expect to miss the rest of the year to an internal ailment. So, they'll seek a medical redshirt. Jason, from what you've heard, what I've heard, it wouldn't surprise me if we never see Janiah White suit up again for the Bulldogs.
Yeah,
ever.
You never know. But then again, we thought the same thing about Tyler Porter in football, and he played this year as a senior. So
different kind of thing.
Different but similar, you know, and so you never know. It sounded really serious, and he's still playing. So something could change in the next year, but I seriously doubt he plays this year, and I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't play again. You're right. So that's, you know, tough to
– tough pill to swallow. But
it's tough for him. I feel bad for him because he was showing so much promise, and he's such a good player.
The good news, if that does happen, is there's rules in place that you're not – you can leave the player on scholarship, but still fill his place, and you can actually oversign them.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he's still on scholarship with the school, but you have a 13th spot open on the basketball team. So
the athletic department will put him to work as a student worker if that would happen. Neither one of us want that to happen. Yeah, he's able to play again. We're just telling you the situation should it happen.
Yeah, we're just speculating, and you can't replace that talented of a 6'11 player very easily, so the odds are you wouldn't be replacing him with someone as good.
16-8 now, Moody, with another long-range three, 14-40 left in the first half.
But, hey, talking about having a career game, Brandon Shepherd, you know, had a career game, but
and didn't even score. Nothing that he did showed up on the stat sheet.
Yeah, it was just wrestling a guy that was 2 or 3 inches taller than him and 20 or 30 pounds heavier than him, and he did a great job and kept him, I think, to 9 points, which was awesome.
Before you get to that point, going back to the ULL, Marlon should be ashamed of himself from a coaching perspective. If you've got a horse like Sean Long, who will be a lottery pick in the NBA draft, and you're up by 10 in the second half, slow the game down, put the beast on the block, and feed him the rock.
But it's partly coaches to blame, but also it's Long. I mean, the guy just looked disinterested most of the time.
And he's out of shape.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he would get a rebound if it came within his area.
18-13, Ole Miss, 13-40 left.
So he would get a rebound if it came to his area, and he'd get a few putbacks. But, I mean, the guy just did not have any energy. And I know he's played well here before, or against Tech before. He did have 14 rebounds. But 9 points, 14 rebounds, he should have had 30 points. And I thought Shepherd, you know, played 25 minutes, and you're right, 0 points, only 3 rebounds, doesn't look that impressive.
But defensively, nothing that he did defensively is going to show up on the stat sheet. He muscled him out of the lane.
Yeah, and Long was 3 out of 9. So Shepherd, that's the big step for him, and the fact that he only had 3 fouls in 25 minutes playing against a much bigger player. So he did a great job. But then the other guy that had the career game was obviously Deion Griffin. 9 out of 10, scored 22 points. The guy was just on fire.
Absolutely. I mean, Alex Hamilton, if you're going to try to defend him with a zone defense, that's when you can stop him. But as we're watching right now, he just knocked down a 3-pointer against Ole Miss when they're in man. You can't expect to stop Alex Hamilton when you're playing man defense. He can beat anybody to the hole. His length is incredible from the point guard position.
Yeah, and he's just got such good – he was struggling with his handling a little bit early in the game, but then he got it going, and he's such a good ball handler that he can drive it, and then if you cut him off, he'll just back up and shoot it in your face. He's tall enough to get that shot off over you, and he's so strong finishing, he can draw the foul really well. Let's see how many free throws he had in that game.
And Moody can't miss, folks.
Yeah, he was 14 out of 16 from the free throw line. In the last game was Alex Hamilton. He's already 3 out of 4 from the field in this game with 7 points. So he's leading the way for Tech right now. But, yeah, Hamilton is just already at another level from last year when he was really good. So he's kind of taken over the leadership role. I mean, not saying McCree's not doing a good job, but we wondered which one of those guys would kind of be the go-to player, and I feel like it's Hamilton.
This is going to be a tough one for us.
Oh, yeah.
Being on the TV, so if you hear some awkward silence, I know it's bad radio, we apologize, but there's basketball on television. If this becomes a blowout, it won't be as hard, but it's 23-18.
You're watching the game right now anyway.
23-18, 12 minutes left. Most people will be listening to us, I guess, on the podcast.
But speaking of Griffin, though, I mean, I was the guy that thought, okay, last year Griffin was a good role player. He didn't get a lot of opportunities. When he did get in the court, or even the first couple of games this year, you know, played solid defense, held the ball a little bit, and was just a good role player, didn't screw up anything. But I was thinking, as Luckett and Gene, the newcomers at guard, got more comfortable with the team, they might take some of his minutes, and maybe he wouldn't get very many minutes at all. And he's totally proven me wrong, because now he's being aggressive with his offense. He's not just passing the ball around and being a distributor. He's looking for that open three-pointer. He's driving and getting in the lane and finishing. And, you know, 9 out of 10 against ULL was proof of it that, I mean, he's not only – taking plenty of shots, he's making them too. So he really proved me wrong, and he's definitely got a spot in the rotation.
Media timeout, 26-19, Ole Miss, 11:34. They can't shoot like this from deep all the entire game. If they do, it'll look like the Memphis game.
Yeah, Moody's already 4 out of 5 from 3 for 12 points. He's 4 out of 5 overall from the field. So all he's taking is three-pointers. So Tech has got to do a better job of staying in front of him. And you know, the Tech's guards are taller than him. They've got to be able to stay in front of him and get a hand up.
His release, John, I know you've been watching it probably a little bit more than we have, but Moody's release is almost impossible to defend. That he needs almost no room. Even though he's 5'10", 5'11", he needs no room to get that shot.
Well, it's not just his release. His extension as he jumps into his shot. He's jumping probably 12, 18 inches off the floor with every jump shot. He's not shooting set shots.
No.
It'll be interesting to see if Derrick Jane comes in to chase him around.
He was already in.
Alex Hamilton's about matching. He's also 4 out of 5 from the field. 2 out of 2 from 3 with 11 points. So Hamilton's staying right with Moody, but overall, Tech's down 26-19. You know, we'll see if they can get back in it before halftime and make it a little bit closer.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll talk a little football. This segment brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents in the area. Go check State Farm out for all your insurance needs. And don't forget, we're brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company in downtown Ruston, 111 North Trenton Street in the historic Rogers Furniture Building, 255-7698. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Jay Ford here, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. 26-21, Ole Miss over Tech. 10:30 left in the first half. Tech's not going away just like they never do. In this one, Tech's actually out to a decent start, which is not their MO this season.
Yeah, you know, we saw a horrible first half against UT Arlington, came back and won. Not a good first half against the Cajuns, came back and won. And then the one game that they did not come back in was Memphis with a horrible first half, and they never could get back in it. But, yeah, Tech's not going away. They're down by 3, so we'll continue to monitor that. Speaking of the bowl game, though, let's get back to that. You know,
let's start with the lines. Vegas has it as a 2-point Tech favorite. Massey has it a 3-point Arkansas State favorite. Sagarin has 2-point Arkansas State favorite.
Okay, so now we've liked Massey all season, but not anymore. Now we like Vegas. So whatever. Yeah, it's just going to be a close game. And it's so hard to tell.
And I agree with this statement. Some people have said on the Bleed Tech Blue Tech Drive message board community, if Tech plays like they did in the middle of the year, they should win this one. But if they come out and play like they did against UTEP and Southern Miss, they can't do that and win.
Yeah, I mean, something went right in the Southern Miss game. and they just weren't clicking, and they, you could tell from the beginning something wasn't right, and they just didn't have it, whatever it is. Southern Miss had it, and they just ran over Tech. Bad day, okay, whatever. If they come out like that again, same thing could happen. So they, and they've been talking about it the last week or so, you know, are they excited for this game? Are they up for this game? Will they match the intensity of Arkansas State, or will they have more intensity than Arkansas State? The seniors are saying they don't want to go out like that with two bad efforts in a row or make it a third one. You know, one thing I looked at was the last three home games was either raining or it was wet. And then, of course, the UTEP game, they're out in El Paso, and it's 25 to 30 mile per hour winds. So Driscoll has not had a game in a while, it seems like, where he's been able to have a great passing game. Conditions, the conditions were not right to have a great passing game. The other,
well,
teams,
one thing's for sure, the conditions will be perfect inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome.
That was my point. So, you know, everybody's keying on Dixon, trying to stop Dixon, and Tech's been able to make them pay all year, and Driscoll's lit them up. So you've got Carlos Henderson playing in his hometown, Paul Turner playing his last game. I just feel like these guys are going to be able to spread the field. Driscoll's going to be hitting them. He's going to go to Trent Taylor 100 times across the middle. They're going to cut Arkansas State up, I feel like, because of those conditions. And Arkansas State's like 95th in the country against the pass as far as giving up passing yards. So Tech's going to have opportunities to have a big last game.
But what Arkansas State does do in pass defense, they turn you over.
Yeah, and they turn you over, yeah, period. And so kind of like Tech did last year, you know, they get after the ball, they do create turnovers, and Tech's going to have to protect the ball. You know, if they do try to air it out, they can't make, you know, bad passes, obviously. And we've seen big spots this year and last year where Trent Taylor or Kenneth Dixon will fumble the ball. So they, those two are going to have the ball in their hands most of the time. They have got to protect it.
28-27, Ole Miss, 8:22 remaining in the half. Jason, Kenneth Dixon put out a open letter to the Tech family today. I thought it was really – really well said. I'll read it here. Dear Bulldog fans, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. Thank you for your years of unwavering support, for showing up to games, being loud, and for welcoming a kid from a small town in Arkansas with open arms and accepting him as family. You have meant a lot to me and the rest of this senior class, more than I can express in words. I can't tell you the impact you have on us when you show up to games and support us. Over the past 4 years, you have made an impact that we can't really measure, but it matters. We need you once more. We need to see the hype that you bring to every game. It would mean so much to our team to run out of the tunnel at the Superdome and see a sea of blue. Arkansas State is going to bring a lot of fans, and we need your support Saturday. I think this is a great team in a special senior class. We have won 30 games, but our 31st could be very remarkable. I hope we can share that with you in person. It is important to us, as a team, to have you in New Orleans. Please come support us at the Dome. Be loud and wear blue. You are what makes Louisiana Tech special. You are why we have won 30 games. You are why I love Louisiana Tech. See you Saturday in the Dome. Sincerely, Kenneth Dixon, number 28. How much has he grown as a man from when he signed at Louisiana Tech?
Oh, it's amazing. I just remember, you know, we've been doing this since 2008, and just some of the recruits that would come in, like a Philip Lavis or a Jordan Mills, and, you know, you were interacting on Twitter today with Kendrick James, and I remember interviewing Kendrick and Tyrone Duplessis for the first time. You could get hardly a word or two out of them. And then just after 4 or 5 years, you know, how much they grow. And Kenneth, I mean, golly, he's come such a long way that, I mean, he is, you know, the spokesperson for this team. And just like he said, coming from strong Arkansas, you never would have thought that in a million years. And, you know, being from South Arkansas myself, I used to beg the Tech coaches, hey, why don't y'all look up there? There's great athletes there, and they're just an hour away, hour and a half away. And the answer was always, well, you know, you can go to Dallas or New Orleans and be in a smaller area, you know, geography-wise, but have 400 times the kids to look at population-wise. And so it just didn't – it was more, you know – it was a waste of time in their mind to go up there and search all these little high schools. But never in my wildest dreams would I imagine that they would find a player as good as Kenneth Dixon, and a kid as good as Kenneth Dixon, right there in Strong. I mean, that was unbelievable. And so they've gone back now, and you see them recruiting with Emmanuel Turner and Jaquise Dancy. You know, they're going back to that area looking for more players, and hopefully that pipeline will continue, because you've seen Division I players coming out of Warren and Camden and some of those, you know, middle-sized, you know, towns. But, you know, Magnolia, El Dorado, those areas have players, and they're just within an hour and a half of Ruston. So it's in the backyard, and nobody else recruits them. Arkansas State recruits there a little bit, ULM maybe a little bit, but for the most part, that area is just totally ignored because the schools are smaller and because it's hard to get to. There's nowhere else close to it.
But to see him in his – my final act, that sounds like a president, but final act as – before he plays football for Louisiana Tech one last time, I thought that was a extremely classy gesture to the Tech family that I promise you won't go unnoticed from the Tech Nation or the Tech world or whatever you want to whatever cliche you want to use.
Yeah, I mean, to have somebody like Kenneth Dixon from a small town in South Arkansas or Quentin Patton from a small town in Tennessee to come in, nobody had hardly heard of them. You know, they're not a Louisiana kid that people have seen play in high school for all these years. To come in and have the careers that they've had, you know, and to become loved like they are, I mean, it just shows, you know, how special players and people they are. And so Kenneth definitely, you know, won the hearts over Bulldog fans early on, and now everybody, you know, thinks the world of him.
Another question from the Tech Drive community: any indication on how ticket sales are going for Tech? I don't think we will set the record, just hoping we don't embarrass ourselves and get shown up by Arkansas State. From what I understand, it's that they're on track to sell just as many tickets as they get in the heart of Dallas Bowl.
Well, and we can talk to Luke here in a minute, but from what I saw on Twitter, I think they're right at 4,000 tickets sold from Arkansas State. I don't know what Tech's initial allotment was, but of the $60 tickets, but they've sold out of them. And so now they've got
I think both fan bases will be pretty well equally represented. I don't think either one will outnumber the other.
I feel like Tech's got a chance to have a little bit more. It might not be very noticeable, but I think Tech's going to have a few more. I don't know what Tech's initial allotment was. They sold out of it. Now they've got the $40 tickets in the sections next to the main section. You know, I just bought six of those, and they're selling those today. So we'll see how many more they sell. But, you know, I mean, if they have around 8,000 fans and Tech has around 10 or 12, hey, great. It's going to be a good atmosphere.
I don't think either fan base will have that many fans there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean,
one of the misnomers is last year that Tech had 10,000 fans in the heart of Dallas Bowl. That's not true.
Well,
period.
It looked like it. And if it looks like that in the big 80,000 seat, whatever, Superdome.
65,000.
Whatever it is.
I bet the Cotton Bowl seats more than Superdome does.
Yeah, so a crowd of even 15,000 total fans will look pretty good in there compared to the Cotton Bowl, you know, that's so cavernous. It's huge. So, and it's going to get loud in there because it is a dome. So I feel like it's going to be a pretty good crowd. You know, we'll see. But I feel like Tech's got a chance to have more, just – obviously because of proximity, number one. But
Ole Miss, not to interrupt you, but Ole Miss shooting 54% from the field and 50% from behind the arc, and out-rebounding Tech 14-10. That's really not as bad as I expected it to be.
Yeah, and they just got another wide open three to push the lead out to nine. So
make that 7 of 13.
Yeah, I mean, just wide open. They moved the ball around and found the guy in the corner. So Tech's going to have to shore up on the three-point defense, no doubt.
Well, at 8 of 14, that's what they're shooting from distance. You're really okay giving up that many shots from behind the arc, because most teams aren't going to hit 8 of 14. And that skip pass he just made across the floor is a low-percentage pass.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we'll see if they can keep it up. Hopefully they'll slow down a little bit. You got Luke coming up when?
6:30, okay. In a minute. So let's take this break. Other side of the break, Luke Matheson from RedWolfReport.com talking a little Louisiana Tech, Arkansas State here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This segment brought to you by Brister's Smokehouse here in Ruston on Cooktown Road. About to move across the street. Just stay tuned. Next time you go to Brister's, make sure that you're going to the right place. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company in downtown Ruston, 111 North Trenton Street in the historic Rogers Furniture Building, 255-7698 for all your interior needs, from cabinets to floors to appliances to fixtures. They got it all. Give those guys a call, 255-7698. Let's go to the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline and our friend Luke Matheson from RedWolfReport.com. How's it going, my man?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going well. Well, Luke, let's start out with giving your overall thoughts on the game.
You know, I think it's going to be a phenomenal football game. It's a game between two teams that certainly have a history. And if you look at what both sides are saying, you know, there's different views of it. But at the end of the day, this is where each team has to play. And I think that the Superdome is going to benefit, because I think there's going to be a lot of fans from both sides show up.
Well, let's go ahead and go there. Jason and I just talked about attendance. Sounds like Jason was saying on Twitter, it looked like Arkansas State sold about 4,000 tickets. Texas sold around there, from what I've been told. I haven't been given a specific number. What do you expect overall for both fan bases?
You know, I think that you'll probably see, you know, closer to 20,000 from both. I know the past 4 years in Mobile, Alabama, Arkansas State has averaged 23,000. The 4,000 is close to 4,200 now, from what I understand. That's just what has been sold through the university. I know of a lot of folks that have purchased tickets through Ticketmaster, be it to get them a little bit cheaper. You know, some people that have children that want to be in a different area than where the, I guess what you could consider maybe the party crowds will be at. And so, I mean, there's all, of course, you have the StubHubs and all that. But I know that the ticket sold through the University of Arkansas State this year, it has broken the record of what was sold previously in the GoDaddy Bowl appearances. And it's just, I mean, just see, I wish I had a way to see how many were sold through the other outlets as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Luke, this is Jason. How are the fans up there feeling about this game as far as the destination? You know, they've been going to the same bowl, it seems like, for a while. The Cajuns have been going to the New Orleans Bowl. Are they excited about the change of venue?
Absolutely. You know, and, you know, like I said, four straight years to the GoDaddy Bowl, there was actually talk that if the GoDaddy Bowl would have invited Arkansas State, that they would have turned it down because fans simply were not interested in going back down there again. And, you know, even if it would have been the Camellia Bowl or even the bowl down in Orlando, Florida, you know, fans would have taken those over the GoDaddy Bowl. And nothing against the GoDaddy Bowl. I've been. It's a great time down there. The city of Mobile does a great job. But you can only go to the same place so many times before you're ready for something different. And Arkansas State has kind of felt slighted at times by the Sun Belt in regards to them sending Louisiana Lafayette there so many times. But at the same time, you have to understand, Lafayette's closer. They will sell more tickets. And that plays a huge role in bowl game placement. 2 years ago, when Arkansas State went to the GoDaddy Bowl, we saw that play out in Arkansas State's favor. Western Kentucky beats Arkansas State in week 10 of the year that year, and Arkansas State ends up in New York, or excuse me, in Mobile for the GoDaddy Bowl. People start asking, well, why, especially Western Kentucky fans, because they ended up not even going to a bowl. I get down to Mobile, I start asking people from the bowl, I said, well, why did you take Arkansas State over Western Kentucky? They said, well, last year Western Kentucky played a bowl game within 2 hours of their home stadium, only sold 4,000 tickets. Arkansas State came here last year, which is 8.5 hours from their home stadium, and sold over 20,000. Said that's why tickets sold.
Well, and a lot of that, ticket sales are off definitely important. But what we've seen being so close to Shreveport is, a lot of times if you're too close, they're worried about hotels too. And so, you know, I think both Arkansas State and Louisiana Tech are far enough away that you're definitely going to see a lot of hotels filled up in New Orleans, whereas maybe Lafayette or other schools that are closer to their bowl destinations, maybe they were able to just drive over for the day of the game and then go back home. So, you know, I think if you try to drive back from Ruston after this game, you're going to be back in the wee hours of the morning.
Luke,
well, yeah, and
go ahead.
I was going to say the motel issue. That is actually what got Arkansas State back in the GoDaddy Bowl last year. Of course, South Alabama was bowl eligible, and the GoDaddy Bowl wanted to take South Alabama because they're from Mobile. And we started hearing rumors that the Chamber of Commerce down there and business owners went to the GoDaddy. People said, there's no way you can take South Alabama. We won't sell anything. We won't make any money. And so GoDaddy Bowl and Community Bowl made a deal. Community Bowl took South Alabama last year. GoDaddy took Arkansas State.
Luke, when you look at this game, of course, you run ArkansasVarsity.com as well, the Arkansas High School recruiting site for on Rivals.com. You look at Kenneth Dixon. Of course, he's a big name in the state of Arkansas. And before Arkansas came in late, they would dispute that they did that. In the process, it was Arkansas State and Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech, of course, got the commitment pretty early from Dixon in July, if my memory serves me correctly. Is there any talk from the Red Wolf fams about Dixon?
Oh, absolutely, and it's no secret. If Arkansas State is to win this football game, Arkansas State has to stop Kenneth Dixon, period. And there's a lot of respect for Kenneth Dixon. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing him. I have not get to see him play in person since his high school career, and I was the first person ever to write a story on Kenneth Dixon. So Kenneth and I, we still have a good relationship. Speak with him on Facebook from time to time and shared a few text messages with him. I'm super proud of the guy. He's done a tremendous job. His single-season rushing record was actually broken this past weekend by a young man from Rivercrest in Arkansas. And this kid isn't going to be a Division I kid. He's too small. Probably played Division II somewhere, but I saw that Kenneth congratulated him. And I tell you what, you got to give that just speaks to the kind of man that Kenneth Dixon is to take a moment and congratulate a kid that he doesn't even know for breaking his record. And, you know, there's going to be a couple of friends. Kenneth Dixon has a friend that plays for Arkansas State, a young man by the name of Quantario Heath, who was a linebacker for Arkansas State. So they played in the same conference in high school together. Quintario's from Rising, Kenneth's from Strong. And so I know we call him Q Heath here. I've talked to Q, and you know, he's looking forward to not only seeing an old friend, but competing against an old friend as well.
Yeah, that should be a good matchup. And just looking over the Arkansas State roster, I mean, I know nobody knows, you know, high school players in Arkansas better than you do, but some of these names sound familiar to me, and I know Tech recruited a few of them. Jamal Bell out of Warren recently. Also the Jamar Clark, the offensive lineman, and then the tight end, Darian Griswold, and then not to mention the quarterback. I mean, even back then, you know, Tech was looking at the same kind of players as Arkansas State. So there's not a lot of overlap as far as recruiting, but there's a few players that both schools have gone after.
And Luke, while we're on a recruiting segment, we'll go into more of the X's and O's in the 6:45 segment. But you look at who Louisiana Tech's after there in the southeast portion of the state, right in there in your backyard, with David Beasley, who there was some talk that he might be decommitting. That obviously didn't happen. Then John Tate, his teammate. What's the latest you're hearing on John Tate?
Yeah, you know, Beasley, he did mention decommitting. He actually told me face-to-face that he was thinking about it, and his head coach, Bobby Bolden, got a hold of him and said, boy, what are you thinking? Nobody else has even called you in 3 or 4 months. His exact words, you would be stupid to decommit when you don't have nothing else right now. John Tate, from what I understand with Tate, he's probably a Boise State lean. And here's the deal with Tate. I'm just going to cut it as dry as I can. John Tate is listening to whoever tells him he will play defensive end in college. John Tate is not going to be a defensive end at college. He's too big. He's going to be a 3 technique. And that is what Arkansas State told him. That is what Louisville told him.
That's what Louisiana Tech told him, I think.
Yeah, that's what Tech is. That's what everybody has told him. But Boise State, and Boise State's just telling him, yeah, you'll be a defensive end, but in my opinion, to get him. And as soon as he signs that paperwork, gets on campus, well, guess what? You're a 3 technique. You're too big to be a defensive end.
And Luke, and then we know that that's just the game of recruiting. They're going to tell you what you want to hear, and then you're going to go there, and then things are going to change. And so I've got this question for you. I've been thinking about this the last couple of weeks. How many times do we see kids from Arkansas and from Louisiana, if they don't get that Arkansas offer, that LSU offer, they get recruited by Kansas State or Minnesota or Iowa State, and you see them go off? Utah has been big recently. They'll go off for a year, realize how cold it is, realize that it's not all that it was cracked up to be, and they end up coming back home anyway. It seems like if they would just pick Arkansas State or Tulane or Louisiana Tech in the first place, it would save them a lot of heartache. And we've seen Tech players like Jeff Driscoll and Houston Bates, who were playing in the bigger schools and ended up at Tech for their fifth year, they've said, you know, it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Well, exactly. And I know Tech has had success getting guys from the Power Five conferences that were recruiting them, as has Arkansas State. There's a young man on the defensive line right now named Jake Swally at Arkansas State, but he was actually committed to Kansas State and decommitted to go to Arkansas State, and that's exactly what he said. It wasn't what it was cracked up to be. I went on my official visit, saw that isn't what I wanted. He then went to an official visit at Memphis and stayed at Memphis for about a whole 45 minutes and said, nope, not going here. Picked up the phone, called Blake Anderson, drove to Jonesboro, did an official visit, and committed to Arkansas State, and then Purdue and a few others came in late, but he stayed true to his commitment. And I think more and more you're starting to see, especially with your ESPN threes and your Tuesday and Thursday night games where your group of five schools are getting more publicity, and then you look at the success that Arkansas State, Louisiana Tech, and other group of five schools are having at putting guys in the NFL, I think some of these high school kids are realizing, hey, I don't have to go to a big school to get seen. And you know, I've heard guys, a couple of guys at Arkansas State that have been drafted say, listen, I would much rather be the big fish in a small pond than go to the big pond where I'm good enough to play, but then again, I might not ever see that field. And you see teams, Oklahoma, Alabama come to mind. They go in there and they get all these guys. Alfie Tenpenny, who recently passed away out of North Little Rock, was one of those guys that Alabama was never going to play him. And everybody in Arkansas knew that. And he could have went other places, but he went to Alabama, wasted a year and a half, 2 years, and ended up going elsewhere. Went to UNLV and did well there until he got in trouble. And, you know, but you see that Michael Dyer ended up at Arkansas State, and it's been kind of comical, and it's not really comical, but there's been several guys in the past 4 years that have transferred to Arkansas State out of SEC schools who never even made it for Arkansas State, and it's been kind of odd watching that.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll continue talking to Luke Matheson from RedWolfReport.com. On the Fairway Carts of Minden Hotline, it's at halftime right now. Louisiana Tech trailing Ole Miss 52-40. The Rebels are absolutely shooting lights out. 62% from the field, 56% from the three-point line. Out-rebounding Tech 17-13. This segment brought to you by National Jewelry in Ruston. Are also brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company, downtown Ruston, 255-7698. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company in downtown Ruston. We got Luke Matheson from RedWolfReport.com on the Fairway Carts of Minden Hotline. Luke, I'm second-guessing myself that that's the name of your website.
Yeah, RedWolfReport.com.
Okay. I should have just stuck with it and not even acted like I didn't think that's what it was. But
well, I'm just so used to saying Arkansas Varsity because you've got two websites.
He wears many hats. Luke, when you look at this game, you talk about Arkansas State's going to want to try to stop Kenneth Dixon, and that's what teams have tried to do all year long. And then you look at Arkansas State in pass defense; they lead the country. Is that correct? In interceptions, but if you complete the ball against them, you're going to get some yards.
Yeah, they lead the country in interceptions. They also lead the country in complete defensive takeaways. They have forced 38 takeaways on defense, be it interceptions or forced fumbles. They lead the nation in touchdowns off of takeaways at eight. One of the big keys to the defense this year is a completely revamped defensive line. They went out, and there was huge holes in the offensive and the defensive line, both because, quite frankly, Gus Malzahn nor Brian Harsin recruited linemen. And so they went out last year's recruiting class and recruited a bunch of JUCO and then four-year linemen. And it's worked on them. The offensive or the defensive line this year, they're three deep, and no one guy – plays more than three or four snaps at a time, and we've seen throughout the year that they've benefited from that, especially in the second half when other teams, their offensive line is getting tired of. South Alabama and probably Appalachian State are good indications of that. They were both up on Arkansas State at halftime and just completely fell apart in the second half, and it was the defensive line that was making plays. Obviously, you're going to miss Chris Stone, who was arrested last week and is suspended. But he's a guy, despite being an all-conference player, still only three or four snaps at a time, and the guys behind him have got quality snaps, quality reps. That's really been the key to the success on the defense the defensive line being that way. And even when you talk to the linebackers and defensive backs, what they say is they're playing so well that, you know, defensive backs especially, they can take a few more chances than what they normally take. But with taking chances, sometimes you do get burned, and that has played into the yardage average in the passing game that opponents have had against Arkansas State.
Well, one guy that stands out to me on the defensive line is Waylon Robertson. You mentioned the junior college transfers. He came from New Mexico military. 6'2", 338. He's certainly a load there in the middle.
He really is, and you also have a guy that transferred in from UAB last year, and Robert Mundy, and he's been a big run stopper, and he's massive. He's 6'4", 6'5", and I believe he's 330, and he's given offenses fits when they try to run up the middle.
I think I'm going to start. I'm going to start renaming UAB the hostage takers, because they took Conference USA by hostage, and then they had their president took the football program by hostage. But anyway, I just had that random thought. Sorry.
Yeah, and Arkansas State got Robert because his brother Devin Mundy plays at Arkansas State on the offensive line, so it's kind of fun to watch them two go at each other in practice at times. Probably the other key defensive lineman will be Javon Roland Jones, who's been an All-American he was an All-American last year as a true freshman, only played six games at the end of his season early with an injury that required surgery. Hit his elbow on a helmet against Idaho last year and shattered his elbow. And he's had a phenomenal year this year. He's first team All Sun Belt Conference this year.
I was going to say he's a 6'2", 230 defensive end from the Dallas area, and I think he had a team high 9 sacks this year. Is that right?
Yeah, he leads the team in sacks. And the guy that's going to start in place of Chris Stone is Griffin Riggs. Griffin is a true freshman, but he's played very well this year behind Chris Stone. And so, of course, he's going to have to step it up. It's his first time starting. But he's got some quality stats there.
One thing to watch for me, I just noticed this in the stats from the NCAA.org, is Arkansas State nearly leads the country in penalty yards. Least number of penalty yards. And Tech does the same. Who will be there with? I had it right the first time. Arkansas State leads the country in having and being penalized the most, whereas Tech is on the opposite side of the perspective and not getting penalized. What is the issue there? Have some hot-headed players. What's the issue?
Most of the penalty yards honestly came in the first half of the season, and it got to a point where Blake Anderson was threatening to sit players down. Travis Houston leads the team in receptions. He's one touchdown away from breaking the school record this year. And Travis got booted from the South Alabama game because he got two personal fouls. And basically Blake Anderson said, when your time to come back on the field comes again, if you get kicked from another game, you even get one more personal foul, you're done.
But Luke, I'm looking at the stats. They're 122nd in the country. It couldn't be just
right.
One. It just couldn't just be one half of the season.
It really was. They have tremendously improved in the second half of the season. There was a lot of penalties against USC, a lot of penalties against Missouri, a lot of penalties and even against Missouri State. And the second half of the season, they have cleaned them up. Obviously, you have penalties, but majority of those penalties in the first half of the season were personal fouls, and it was just guys, you had some targeting calls, you had things of that nature. Had the Travis Houston incidents where he was, every time he scored a touchdown, he'd say or do something stupid. And so they have tremendously cut down on those in the second half.
Well, I mean, I just looked at the Texas State game. It was 9 penalties. That's a lot of penalties in one game on one team. So I'm not disagreeing with you, but 122nd in the country is that's almost last. So you gotta they take every game into account there. But we'll move on from that point. Offensively, Arkansas State runs the football. Freddie Knighton, people say he's either on or he's off. What's your opinion of Freddie Knighton, the quarterback?
When Freddie Knighton is on, he's hard to stop. You know, even in the Missouri game, he had Arkansas State. And granted, Missouri was not a typical Missouri team this year. But until he got injured, Arkansas State was up 2 scores on Missouri, and they was getting ready to look like they was getting ready to punch it in again. And he got injured. He was out for 3 weeks. He didn't come back until the Louisiana Lafayette game, and he probably wasn't even ready to come back then. The thing that Freddie Knighton gives you is he's quick on his feet. He can extend plays. Where the backup, James Tabry, they lost their game that he played in, and James was a freshman this year. James is a pocket passer. He's got a better throwing arm than Freddie. He's more accurate in the passing game. But if Tabry comes in, you have to change the entire offense to fit him just about. And it's a situation where they will play some option football and run Freddie Knighton out along with either J.D. McKissick or Michael Gordon or one of the other two running backs. And anytime Freddie Knighton has the ball in his hands and it's running, you have to equate for him, because you don't know. He might keep it. He might hand it off. He might pitch it. He might throw it. And really, the passing game is his weakness. He can throw the ball, and that's why Arkansas State, they do a lot of short bubble screens. They do a lot of crossing routes. But every now and then, he can hit a long ball. But, you know, even Arkansas State fans will cringe a lot of times when he's throwing it deep.
When you look across the Sun Belt Conference schedule that the Red Wolves played, of course they won all their conference games. Which game was their biggest test and why?
I would have to say Appalachian State. Both teams undefeated in conference. Winner will lead the conference and be in charge of their own destiny. And Appalachian State, they jumped out on them in the first half, and they came back in the second half. Arkansas State, though, has been a second-half team all year long, just about. And a lot of that goes back to watching about the defensive line. So they, you know, and then, of course, against South Alabama, they scored 28 points in 3 minutes in the third quarter and was down, you know, they were down 2 touchdowns at halftime. And so those two games right there, but definitely the Appalachian State game. Appalachian State beat Arkansas State last year, so, you know, a little bit of revenge factor, I guess you would say. And the reason I say that game also is after that game, they had the lower half of the teams in the Sun Belt, the teams with no more than 2 or 3 wins each. And so after the Appalachian State game, they were in complete control, just basically had to show up and play a game and handle their business.
Well, Luke, on paper, Arkansas State certainly seems like a deep team, and on offense, it seems like they spread the ball around a lot. You've got a three-headed monster at running back, Gordon, Wand, and White. And then at receiver, you mentioned Houston. It's got 10 touchdowns. Pascal, is that how you pronounce it, has over 500 yards as well, 19 yards per catch. But the one that seems to be their go-to guy is J.D. McKissick. He leads the team in receptions with 49 and also has 15 rushes. What kind of a playmaker is he?
J.D. McKissick is a guy that, if he's got the ball in his hands, he can score on any given play. A lot of teams have done well at holding him, but a lot of times, and this is where Pascal and the rest of the guys are getting some of their numbers, is we've seen at times that people have double and triple teamed McKissick, and it opens the other guys up to do things. But this year he's been healthy. Last year he was hurt, wasn't healthy at all, and this year he's playing like he played 2 years ago when he was an All-American. And he's probably, if there's one guy on the team that will have a chance to be drafted this year, it's J.D. McKissick. And he's phenomenal. He's phenomenal on special teams, too. He will return kicks and punts, and that's where he is the most dangerous, because he does have some open field to work with.
Well, and then running back, I mentioned there's 3 of them. Gordon's the bell cow with over 1,000 yards, but Johnston White has 14 touchdowns, but he's not even 200 pounds. You would think a guy with kind of that many touchdowns would be a bigger guy. What makes him so good in the red zone?
And J. John, he is a guy that the first hit rarely ever brings him down. The kind of the cool thing about Johnson White, everybody calls him Silky because he's smooth when he runs, so he picked up the nickname Silky. But he was a walk-on last year, and when they started having injury issues, Michael Gordon went down and everybody else went down. Here's this walk-on that pops up out of nowhere and just blows it up last year. So Blake Anderson put him on scholarship. He's done a phenomenal job, and he's your guy you're going to see on third down. He's your guy that you're going to see if they're inside the 10-yard line, you know, in the red zone. And then of course, Warren Wan, he's a true freshman. He's a little bitty guy. He's probably, you know, 5'6", 5'7", a buck 30 soaking wet, but he's so doggone fast, and he hides behind the line well that a lot of times it's guys in the secondary that are catching him and bringing him down. I guess, you know, it's because it's hard for him. He's so short. Once he is behind the line, it's hard for the linebackers to see.
Well, and I was going to ask you about him. All three running backs are over 6 yards a carry, so you don't lose any kind of production with any of them in. But one, ESPN's got him listed at 5'5", 174. I mean, if he's really that heavy, he's like a bowling ball. Maybe that's a little bit of a error there by ESPN.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite that big. He's got some thick legs on him, and he runs hard. And, of course, Johnson White and Michael Gordon both have worked with him. And when Arkansas State got him out of Oklahoma last year, you know, on National Sign Day, they talked about how special he's going to be. And you're looking at the stats, you know, a kid that's, you know, 5'6", 5'7", and that small, you're like, really, this guy's going to be it. And so far, he, you know, one kind of comical play that he had earlier in the year, I believe it was against Louisiana Lafayette. He actually, when he went through the line of linemen, tried to tackle and pulled the shoe off, and he still went 80 yards with just one shoe. And, you know, so kind of little joke there, take your shoes off, you might go further. But he's a phenomenal back, and he's going to be one of the go-to guys next year when Michael Gordon's gone.
Luke, did Arkansas State feel pretty fortunate in their draw from the conference schedule? They avoided Georgia Southern. You mentioned the hardest game being Appalachian State. The only other team with a winning record in the conference they played was Georgia State.
Well, that might have been the only other teams with winning records in the conference, but having to go to App State on the road, that was...
There's no doubt that's the hardest game of the season.
Yeah, that was the worst draw possible, I think.
Well, when you talk to the team, they want some of Georgia Southern, and the reason why is the smack talk that Georgia Southern has brought ever since they came to the conference. And then last year, they were awarded the conference championship, which they went undefeated in conference. Can't say nothing about that, but they did not play any of the defending champions and still have not played any of the defending champions in Arkansas State and Louisiana Lafayette. Granted, Lafayette probably would have got thrashed by them this year because they just weren't very good this year. But Lafayette, from what I understand, and Arkansas State both kind of feel the same way about Georgia Southern. They want a piece of that just to see how it would turn out.
Well, as long as the Mr. Peanuts, the conference commissioner for the Sun Belt, you don't have anything to worry about. Nothing legitimate's going to happen.
You want to talk about somebody that people don't like. Arkansas State had to award themselves the conference trophy because nobody from the Sun Belt came to Jonesboro to get the undefeated conference champions their trophy. I mean, Blake Anderson and Terry Mahadre, the athletic director, you know, they said it doesn't matter who hands us the trophy. But, I mean, the fans were livid. You know, there's even jokes that, you know, Sun Belt Conference is located in the Superdome. There's even been jokes about, well, that's even too far for Killer Carl. That's why they call it Killer Carl. That's even too far for Killer Carl to come see Arkansas State play. And, you know, there's some stuff that last time that he came to award a conference trophy to Arkansas State, they booed him off the field. So,
well, he got booed at Louisiana Tech too when he was WAC conference commissioner, and weekly I called Carl Benson an idiot on the radio, and it's just been it's been a few years since I've gotten to do that, so I'll just do it now. Carl Benson's an idiot.
Well, you know, and fairness to Carl, from what we understood, he was not able to make it to Jonesboro because his wife was in very bad medical condition. We heard that she may even not make it through the night. But it's like I said when I reported it, that didn't excuse anybody else from jumping on a plane. You know, New Orleans to Jonesboro in a private jet doesn't take very long. And so there was no excuse for the Sun Belt not to have somebody there to award that trophy.
Well, Luke, we appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. And we'll see you Saturday inside the Superdome.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys.
Luke Matheson joining us on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline, talking a little Louisiana Tech, Arkansas State.
And you asked if Ole Miss could continue the hot shooting into the second half. So far, yes, they can.
The answer is the affirmative. 63-46, Ole Miss, 15:25 left in the game. Not a good look for Louisiana Tech. 62% from the field for Ole Miss, and 53% from behind the arc. Tech being out rebounded 21-16. Now they sure are missing that post presence for the Bulldogs. This segment brought to you by Pierce Service Company and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty. We'll be back right after. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We're brought to you by Trenton Interiors and Company in downtown Ruston, 255-7698. For 63-49, Louisiana Tech trailing Ole Miss, 14-16 left in the game. Jason, every time I look up and Ole Miss is making a basket, they're wide open.
Wide open, and McCree just tried to take it to the rack and had the turnover, but I was glad to see him putting the ball on the floor. McCree is so good when he puts the ball on the floor, but a lot of times you'll see he and Hamilton settling for jump shots. I want to see Hamilton and McCree taking it to the rack over and over, just like this play here.
Yep, and he just got and Hamilton got hacked.
And he got the foul. I mean, that's those two players can be so successful.
And Conkle's on the ref. You're in an SEC building, Conkle. You're not gonna get any help from the Zebras. Not that they got any help Saturday from the Zebras. That might be the worst. I say it probably every week.
Everybody.
The worst crew we've seen in the TAC.
We've never seen a good
– It's official. A fact. There has not been a good crew in the Thomas Assembly Center.
Every year it seems like there is no home court advantage from the referees for some reason.
Whitehead from Denham Springs, who refereed the Memphis game for Louisiana Tech, he comes to Ruston every once in a while. But he is alone in being the only good official that we ever see in Ruston.
Yeah, Miss Eddie Monster.
Somebody asked me on Twitter, how are these guys not held accountable? I think that's a great question, and why? And even in the NFL, against the Saints and the Panthers, with all the 12 men on the field, that was never called. What does it hurt from the league to put out a statement and say, yeah, this crew missed this many calls? Do that every week and throw them under the bus. How can it hurt you?
And if you don't want to find them, you know, the ones that grade out well, give them the big games. The ones that suck, send them down to
– That's probably what happens.
Send them down to Timbuktu and make them, you know, ref some game in a barn in front of 200 fans, you know. Don't let them continue to get the good games if they can't do well on a big stage.
The accountability just isn't there. They give a little flashback to last season, Tech's win at Texas A&M.
Yeah, showed a little Speedy Smith on there and obviously Alex Hamilton. But, I mean, Tech's kind of staying within striking distance, but just not able to.
This reminds me a little bit of the ULL game. They were down 10 in the second half and won by 12.
It's still down 16. It seems like they'll get within 10 or 12 and then Ole Miss hit another big shot. But, you know, with 13:45, 13:46 left, you know, Tech's going to have to make a run here pretty soon or it's going to be too late.
Let's hear from you on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline, 888-993-7762, or the text line, same number, 888-993-7762. Jason, going back to that football game that's happening Saturday inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, we talked about it in the break. Just a few weeks ago, we were talking about how bad Southern Miss's schedule was. Clearly, that doesn't matter. You and I know nothing about football when it comes to looking at schedules.
Yeah, I mean, I just drew that comparison, and you know, Southern Miss seemed to be beating up on some mediocre teams, and Arkansas State has too, and so. It tends to make you want to take them lightly. You look at – they haven't beat a FBS team in several years. Tech's beaten plenty of them. You know, Tech's played a much tougher schedule over the years and won. But, at the same time, you know, I sat right here and said that Southern Miss hadn't really beaten anybody, and they came in here and blew the doors off Tech. So a lot of it, you throw it out the window when you line up. I'd say a big percentage of it is effort and intensity and who wants it more. And we won't know until you get there on Saturday night.
Here's a text from on the text line from Tim. I enjoy watching the Bulldogs play. However, if they find a way to win tonight, what does Tech need to do to accomplish selling more than 4,000 tickets at their home game? They are a great team, and they have have exciting basketball, but the fans do not show up.
Hey, if we're complaining about 4,000 fans, I'm happy because
– I'm not. You know me.
I've sat there in the 90s and watched 500 fans. In the last several years, they averaged between 1,500 and 1,700 before Mike White came. And so the last 4 years, they've doubled that. Tech's on the right track. I don't know the answer to get even more.
It's better. It's better in the I hate using the preseason term, but before conference, before the conference slate, the attendance is better this year than it's been in years past. Student attendance is outstanding this year.
Yeah,
they're into the game. They're filling the student section on the lower on the in the red section, and they're even expanding into the blue section in the upper deck. The question remains: what do they have to do to get the local fans out? Same goes for football. Although it was better the football and at football against Southern Miss, they came out while the students didn't. And yes, the students were out of school. I understand that. We don't have to go down that road. But noon on a Saturday. Could the game have not been at a better time from a family perspective? Of course, it's the holiday season, so you got the built-in excuse of. We got a Christmas shop.
Our family's in town. Bring them.
We got
to the
family
game.
In town. We got Christmas parties. If you got a Christmas party in the middle of the day on Saturday, you need to talk to your friends.
You're partying too much. A little too much egg.
Or actually, you need to learn really how to party. Doesn't partying happen when the sun goes down?
Nah, I wouldn't know. But
back in your day, you knew.
Somewhat. Tech is on the right track. And I think the students today are not spoiled. Maybe they are, but they don't understand what it's like to come to games when you're beating some team from the Sun Belt that you've never heard of, 55-53 in a low-scoring game. When Keith Richards, you know, teams are pounding the ball on the court, just holding the ball and just dribbling
the air out of the ball.
Yeah, knock down, drag out fights of a game, which, I mean, they were good defensive teams and there were good players like Millsap and Meeking and Gerard and all them, but now it's fast-paced, Tech's winning. In the last, you know, this is the, what, fourth year in a row or fifth year in a row, we've had really good teams coming into the TAC, and Tech was a good team on the in some of the national, you know, radar, and, you know, vying for a spot, a large berth, you know, in most years. And so now we've got all these home games that we've never had. Tech's actually buying home games, acting like a, you know, a contender, you know, for an at-large berth.
And I'm really not complaining about attendance at an LSU Shreveport or a North Carolina Central or that kind of thing. But yeah. Whatever you've got, ULL coming in town, UT Arlington, who is good basketball team, there's no reason not to be there. Yes, Southern is Friday night, and it's the day before Tech plays in a bowl game. Attendance is not going to be good there.
No, that one won't be very good, but you're right.
And there's only after Southern, you got Prairie View A&M, another SWAC team. I know that stinks. I even get that.
But, yeah, the ULL, the Texas Arlington, and then we're going to get January 2nd and January 7th, you know, the first two conference games, Southern Miss and Old Dominion. The Old Dominion game is going to be 8:30 at night, a little bit late on a Thursday night. It's going to be on CBS Sports Network. That should be a huge crowd a Thursday night, and we'll see. I mean, Tech, when it rolled into January the last couple of years under Mike White, Tech started doing some promotions to really try to pack the TAC, and we saw that number jump from, you know, 3,500 to 4,000 fans. You'd see five and a half, you know, really huge crowds for that arena, and it was really nice to see, and so hopefully we'll see that again.
And against ULL, it's amazing how loud the TAC gets and how quickly it gets loud.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take many, but
you can have 2,500 fans in there.
And it gets loud.
And if they're excited and they start screaming, it's going to get loud.
Imagine how deafening it would be with eight in there.
It'd be unbelievable. And I don't...
I hear that it happened with Lady Texters back in the day whenever the Lady Vols would come.
I've seen it packed twice. Lady Vols in the late 90s, and then in 96, the Olympic team came. The women's Olympic team came to play a preseason game. I was a high school senior. I drove down from El Dorado that afternoon, bought one of the last tickets, and sat in the top row in the corner. It was insane.
Who were they playing?
The women's Olympic team.
Oh, so it was Lady Texas versus the national team.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But for a men's game, the biggest crowds I've seen were the last couple of years. Maybe it was against Marshall. I don't remember. They did one of the big promotions.
I've seen some pictures from Carl's Day where it's pretty dang packed.
Yeah, that was before my time. And they had good crowds. I remember in the early 90s, I'd come down and watch P.J. Brown play, and they'd have good crowds. But just in the last couple of years, some of those games against Marshall or whoever it was, they did the big promotion. You know, they were taking pictures. You know, Tom Morris had some good pictures up from that game. You know, it was up every section, even up in the top sections, every section was mostly full. And I don't know what the numbers came out, but one of those games was over 6,000, I believe.
For folks that haven't been to a Tech basketball game in a while, but they've been to football games, I want you to know the entertainment value, even when Tech is having a good football team. The entertainment value isn't even close. The basketball games are really fun.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's really fast-paced, and it's just a great environment. You know, you can even, you know, bring your kids. They love to get popcorn, and they love to go find Champ and chase him down. And get the things that the cheerleaders throw up in the arena. It's, you know, it's interactive, and it's just exciting. And Tech's been playing really good basketball the last few years. And, you know, Tech's got one of the top – I know people hate the term mid-major, but Tech's got one of the top mid-major programs in the country. And, you know, when you see Utah State or Nevada or whoever, you know, having 8,000, 10,000 fans show up to their games, you know – and you envy that. Well, Tech's got the same product, and maybe we don't have the population that some of those other schools have, but Tech's, you know, Ruston's growing, Tech's growing the student population, and I think we're seeing that with the student attendance, and I think it's just going to keep getting better as long as Tech keeps their commitment to winning like they've been doing.
68-55, Ole Miss leads Tech, 11:45 left in the game. Let's take this final break. This segment brought to you by Brennan Dodge and Dairy Queen, and title sponsor Trenton and Tears and Company in downtown Ruston. On the other side of the break, Jason, let's talk a little conference expansion. Conference realignment.
Oh, yeah.
Your favorite topic. Most people are thinking, not again.
See ya.
Unfortunately, it seems like it may be again. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7, brought to you by Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston, 111 North Trenton Street in the historic Rogers Furniture Building, 255-7698. Jason, a little conference realignment talk. CBSSports.com put out that the Mountain West may be eyeing UTEP and Rice for possible expansion in the future. They didn't think that it was imminent.
And then they had their meetings here recently, and they came out and said they're not going to add anybody. And so it got shot down, I think, yesterday for the time being. But, you know, expansion never stops. Realignment never stops. It's always going to keep going. And so I've always thought that Tech and Southern Miss and Marshall and even UAB could eventually get in the AAC, especially if Cincinnati or UConn kind of moved on. But in that Mountain West, you got to think Rice, UTEP, even Texas, San Antonio are candidates eventually if they go from 12 teams to more, because all the other conferences are going to 14 and 16 teams.
If it's a Texas team that leaves, you have to think Texas State's there on their radar.
As far as replacing? Yeah, I mean, I feel like
UTSA would not want it whatsoever, but you have to think that Texas State's on the list. Arkansas State's on it.
Yeah, I mean, the usual suspects you always hear, Arkansas State and Louisiana Lafayette, but when you look at things that the conferences always look at, endowment, you know, market size, student population, academics, to me, South Alabama is the number one candidate. They've got a huge endowment. They're in a big market. Pretty big student population, not the biggest. Texas State's got a huge student population. Their academics aren't quite up there with the other schools mentioned, but they're, you know, they would be up there. Georgia State in a massive media market is always going to be, and now Georgia State actually had a decent year in football, you know, so Georgia State's, I think, moved maybe up to one of the top two spots in the pecking order just because they're in Atlanta.
What prompted me to talk about it, Wichita State.
I've been on Wichita State. I follow realignment for the last 15 years or more. I love it. Wichita State quit football in 87. They've got a Cessna Stadium, I think, 30,000 seat stadium. It's still got the track inside of it. They'd have to get rid of that.
Hey, there's, Boise still got a track.
Yeah, there's a bringbackshockerfootball.com they've had forever. There's a pretty good following of people that want to bring it back. The new president last year mentioned, you know, that it's on the radar. Will they ever bring it back? Who knows? I think eventually they will.
And you said you read an article here recently that they approached the Mountain West and the Mountain West turned them down. Didn't say whether or not football was in the equation.
Yeah,
one would have to think it was not.
Yeah, you think with Colorado State, New Mexico, Air Force being in that conference, if Wichita added football, Mountain West has got some good basketball programs like Nevada and Utah State, UNLV, San Diego State. Wichita would be a perfect fit if they added football. They probably did not want a basketball-only school. But
even with Creighton in the Big East now, you would think that if they don't add football that – why wouldn't the Big East come calling?
Yeah, with Creighton gone, Wichita, I mean, Creighton's in Omaha. They're outside of that Big East footprint. Wichita's even further out of it. Maybe the Big East didn't need any more teams, but Creighton being a Jesuit school matched up a lot with some of those private schools over there where Wichita did not.
I mean, you really do know your
hey, I studied this stuff, man. I know it. And you didn't even warn me we were talking about it. But Wichita would be the third school in the state as far as having – you've got the two Big 12 schools there.
Tech's trailing 24, by the way, now 80-56, 7:45 left.
So this is going the way of the Memphis game, where Memphis came out hot shooting and never really slowed down, and Tech was never able to get back into it. Now, the next, same thing's happening with Ole Miss.
Ole Miss plays Memphis next. If both teams shoot like they did against Louisiana Tech, that game may be 200-199.
And, you know, Wichita's a natural rival for Tulsa, so the AAC, you would think they would be on the radar for them. Could Conference USA convince them to come? Maybe, but yeah, I would think.
The other conferences will have no availability for quite some time for them to jump to Conference USA, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I would think if Conference USA was wanting to go to 16 and they went after them and went after like a Buffalo or a UMass, somebody just kind of outside the footprint, you know, maybe, but then you're talking about a massive footprint. I don't know. But yeah, Wichita State has been intriguing to me for years.
What about Missouri State?
Missouri State, pretty good market there in Springfield.
But they're FCS, so they have to go from FCS to FBS.
They would have to make the jump. They've expanded their stadium, either a new stadium or expanded stadium. They've got some newer facilities, but they only seat like 15,000. They'd have to expand their seats. Pretty decent market, natural rival for Arkansas State and Tulsa for whichever conference they got in. They just have not shown the commitment that they wanted to move up. Now, changing their name 10 or 12 years ago helped, going from Southwest Missouri State to Missouri State. Even if anything, it just sounds bigger.
Let's switch gears to predictions. That's how we always end the show. Have you seen an over-under on this one?
I have not. I think the way both teams score, I think you're going to get to a high-scoring game. I feel like Tech's going to air it out. I expect Trent Taylor, Carlos Henderson, Paul Turner to all have huge games. Jeff Driscoll's going to have a huge game. Dixon's still going to be able to get his, even if they key on him.
67.5, yeah. 68.5.
And I'm still going to go over. I'm going to say Tech 37, Arkansas State 34. I think it's going to be a pretty high-scoring game. Maybe even scoring over 70, but I feel like Tech's going to win.
I think they go over there. I know that 68.5 seems like a lot. Then that's on Jerry's Nugget line. The Mirage, the MGM line, has it at 67.5. So, and 2-point favorite for Tech across the board, basically. I'm going to go 42-38 Tech. And it's going to be Arkansas State is going to come back roaring, and it's going to scare the heck out of Tech fans.
Yeah, I mean, so you're going 80 points. So I think we both expect to see the over. I think you're going to see a lot of points scored. But I feel like Arkansas State relies too much on the run.
And too much on turnovers.
Yeah, and if Tech can control their running game and protect the ball on offense, Tech should be able to win this one.
John, you got a prediction?
I'm right along the same lines. I was thinking 41-34 Tech.
41-34 Tech. So we're right there together. And I think we all agree with this. If Tech comes out and plays like they did at UTEP and at home against Southern Miss, they lose going away.
Yeah, and so a lot of it has to do with how amped up they're going to be. You remember last year, one of the first games going down to Lafayette, they were underdogs. They had a chip on their shoulder. There was a little bit of trash talk between the fans about Sun Belt versus Conference USA. And Tech went down there and easily won that game. And I feel like if Tech goes in with a chip on their shoulder, feeling like they're the underdog, which some places have them as the underdog.
Just not at Vegas.
You know, and Coach Holmes is always really good at this, convincing them that they're the underdog and that the other team's really good. If they come in with a chip on their shoulder and play hard and have more effort than Arkansas State, then, yeah, I think they're going to win going away. I think Tech could win by 2 touchdowns. So, you know, who wants it more? That's the big question. And like I said earlier, we won't know until you get there and see their body language and see the atmosphere on Saturday night.
For Jason Jones and John Tabor, we're wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. This is our last show until after the New Year. Wishing you and yours a Merry Christmas. See you after the New Year.
Listen for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors, every Tuesday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. Go deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting with your host, Jonathan Ford. Our show is also brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents, Brister's Smokehouse, National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty, as well as your hotline sponsor, Fairway Cards. Thanks for listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7.